Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. There's a lot to talk about pertaining to recent news. I want to focus this hour on talking about our children and social media use. This past weekend, all of us were privy to the fact that there was an ongoing fight over the status of TikTok. It's put social media back in the headlines. For a while there, TikTok was completely inaccessible, and I personally heard of stories of teenagers especially crying that TikTok was removed. I thought it was an over-the-top response, but I think it communicates something. So we're going to be joined firstly by our friend Dr. Greg Popchak about what healthy practices can families enact when it comes to cell phones and social media use for children. We'll speak to him. We'll hear the wisdom that the Popchaks have to share about that. And then I want to hear from you. What rules do you have for your own family? What rules do you have for smartphones? There's a whole movement of getting children wise phones or dumb phones, as some people call them, or even no phones at all until they're probably 18 and about to leave the house. And mind you, you're the parent, and therefore jurisprudence for their moral and ethical upbringing and their upbringing in the faith is completely yours. And the Lord himself has trusted you to be their parents, and no one has the right to speak against it when it is congruent with faith and morals and your intent for raising virtuous children. So we truly want to hear from you. What has worked? What have you done? How do you regulate smartphone usage or no phones at all? And I guess tangentially, but probably most of all, access to social media. How do you monitor that? Or what kind of access do you allow your children to have at all? And if it's unfettered access, we want to hear from you about how that is working out. The reason why I want to have these conversations is because the data is coming out more and more. And as I speak to my friends, Dr. Greg Popchak and Lisa Popchak and Dr. Ray Garendi, it's becoming clear that continued access to social media is rewiring children's brains in a very particular way, and it's not always helpful. In fact, in many cases, can be detrimental. And so as the data keeps coming out, we have an obligation to respond to it. And so I want to hear from you. I want to hear what has worked for your family or what is it you do. All of this we'll do after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, January 21st. It's the Feast of St. Agnes. And today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. President Trump is taking his first actions of his second term in the White House. Trump signed 9 executive orders to cheers from his supporters in front of a sold-out crowd at the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C.
So I'm going to go right over to here, and I'm going to sign in front of you. Is that okay? Good.
He's rescinded almost 80 of former President Biden's executive actions and signed orders that included a regulatory freeze, one that requires federal workers back in the office 5 days a week, and a withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty. Trump ended the event by throwing the Sharpies he used to sign the orders into the crowd. Israel's military chief of staff is resigning over his failure to prevent the October 7th attack. Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi said he's stepping down in March. He wrote in a letter to Israeli officials that he's making the move as a result of my responsibility for the IDF's failure on October 7th. And at a time when the military has recorded exceptional achievements in restoring Israel's deterrence and strength. This is the most high-profile stepping down of an Israeli official linked to the October 7th attack. And President Trump is signing an executive order aimed at tackling the TikTok ban. In his first time back in the Oval Office, Trump signed the order that he says will allow him to either sell it or close it. He said the app will be worthless if he doesn't approve a potential deal to sell the app, but it may be worth $1 trillion if he does. Trump went on to add he feels the U.S. should get half of TikTok. The app was dark for about 16 hours from Saturday evening to Sunday morning. When users reopened the app, a message popped up thanking them for their patience and praising Trump for getting the app back online. TikTok was banned over concerns its Chinese parent company could pose national security threats. From the Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. 877-573-7825. We will be taking your calls after this segment with my friend Dr. Greg Popchak. 877-573-7825. So start calling now and you'll get to the top of the line. We want to talk about your children and social media and how you govern that. The ongoing fight over the status of especially TikTok has put social media back in the headlines. What healthy practices can families enact when it comes to cell phones and social media for children? Dr. Greg Popchak is the founder and director of CatholicCounselors.com. He and his bride Lisa are the host of More to Life, which airs on Ave Maria Radio and the EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, and they're also developers of the Catholic HOM app, a resource helping Catholic families thrive. Greg, so great to speak with you. How are you?
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, let's let's talk about what social media does to children. In your line of work, you and Lisa continually engage parents who deal with children, who are living mm-hmm. with children, who deal with social media. And so you help walk them through that process.
We do. And I want to say up front, I think that we need to be careful consumers of social media and mm-hmm. teach our children to be careful consumers of social media. But I want to say, be not afraid, mm-hmm. Because as parents, and we talk, Lisa and I talk about this in our book, Beyond the Birds and the Bees, which doesn't just talk about teaching kids the Catholic vision of sexuality, but really how to form a well-formed child, and especially who can relate to others well, with right. the Catholic vision of love. And one of the things we make the point about in there is that as Catholic parents, we have to be careful not to come across to our children that a website or a show or a link or on anything is so scary to us that it could possibly destroy our faith or destroy our children's faith. That we need to be appropriately cautious, and we need to disciple our children into having a healthy relationship mm-hmm. with social media, but we shouldn't treat it as if it was the enemy or the big scary ghost in the closet.
Right. And so this is an exercise in proper jurisprudence here. And parents have an obligation to help walk their children through navigating social media until they themselves develop the moral capacity to do so.
Well, that's exactly right. And so that's what when I talk about a discipleship relationship with our kids. Too many parents, I think, see themselves as gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to set a boundary and not allow you to do something until I open the gate and then allow you to do it. Mm. Without any supervision, without any kind of support or guidance or help. Or we'll say to a child, you know, you can have social media, or you can have TikTok, or you can have whatever at X age, without really considering how mature is that child and are they ready to handle it at that age. And then we end up setting ourselves up for sometimes giving kids access to social media too late and sometimes giving it too soon. Mm-hmm. And although there are, recommendations by most experts that the children should not have access to social media broadly until at least eighth grade, mm-hmm. It's really better to look at behavioral or developmental signs that tell you whether your child can handle social media better than or not, right?
Right.
Things like their ability to read social cues, mm-hmm. So how good are they at relationship and picking up on when somebody's hurt or when somebody's happy or when somebody's concerned? How good are they at communicating their needs and their concerns or their feelings in general? How good are they at impulse control? And how vulnerable are they to criticism or rejection? If you can look at those four criteria, you can have a clearer sense of how well your child can handle the different kinds of interactions that go on in social media, and also develop a plan for helping them manage it more effectively.
Right. So essentially, what you're saying is there is empirical data out there that talks about different ages and what exposure to social media can do to those ages, or even gender-specific, right? What it does to boys, what it does to girls. But ultimately, there really is also the individual discernment of the maturity level of the child and how they can navigate that. And parents have to do that discernment well.
Well, that's right. And to be honest, the research isn't as clear as some of us might like it to be, mm-hmm. in terms of being able to say, you know, that social media affects, for example, the child's brain in these specific ways,
right.
or affects boys or girls in those specific ways. The data isn't really as conclusive as, so for example, Jonathan Haidt in his book, The Anxious Generation,
mm-hmm.
really makes a case for, you know, social media impacting the brain in certain ways, brain pathways in certain ways that set up a child for anxiety. There's some evidence for that and other evidence that suggests that maybe not, that's not the case. And so the jury is still out.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that parents shouldn't be cautious about social media.
Right.
And it certainly doesn't mean that parents shouldn't disciple their children into a healthy relationship with social media. And we can talk about what I mean by that. But I just want to kind of put that up front, that we shouldn't be afraid of social media or anything, because Christ has the victory and he gives us the grace to have healthy relationships with things of the world and teach our children to do the same. But we do have to be smart about it.
Right. And so let's talk about exactly that within a healthy home environment where parents are discipling their children well in virtue, children do develop this kind of grace-filled but also natural capacity to navigate the waters of social media well.
Yes, that's right. And so one of the things that we would suggest, you know, for example, and we did this with our own kids, is that, you know, around that age of junior high, you might have a certain time allotted for social media with parents there, but the parents have access to it. So,
mm-hmm.
hey, let's look at your friends' Instagram accounts or TikTok's streams. You know, let's look at what's going on there. And you're looking at it together and discussing it. And you're teaching them how to interact with their friends around different posts or different things that come up on the thing. And then you put it away for a time, you know. And then, so you're teaching your kids from an earlier age how you expect them to behave around social media.
Mm-hmm.
Another good rule of thumb, we always taught our kids, who are now all adults, that social media is social, right? So, and when I say adults, like our youngest is a freshman in college, so we're still kind of working on this, right? but you know, that social media is social. In other words, if you're on your phone, you've invited somebody into my house,
right?
And I have a right to be part of that conversation, or at least know what's going on. It's not a what's on your phone? Who are you talking to? You're telling me what's going on. It's not you know, it's not a breathing down your neck kind of experience, but it's a, oh, your friend is in the house. How's your friend doing? You know, what's going on in their life? What are they saying? And to make it, the expectation is that this is part of our family discussion. This is part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you brought this person into my home, I have a right to be part of that discussion in an appropriate way. And you know, it's really helpful. And in fact, kids in general, our kids in particular, really found that to be a very helpful thing, because every once in a while things would come up that they
right.
wouldn't know how to handle, or they'd want to ask a question. And if they saw us not being adversarial or terrified or, you know, too reactive, but rather adopting that sort of helpful and discipling attitude, they would volunteer questions. They
right.
would ask us, you know, hey, this is going on. I'm not sure how I feel about this. What do you think? Could you come here and look at this? And you can have a friendly discipleship relationship around these things. It's important, of course, that you're not just doing this around social media, but that you're looking at your whole relationship
right.
as well. Because, you know, you can't expect your kids to invite you in to that social media relationship if you're not putting the time in the rest of your relationship and having those kinds of conversations in general. But assuming that, then this should be an extension of that relationship.
Right. And so this goes back to the grander picture of discipleship parenting and doing this well by being involved and being intentional about showing and modeling virtue for our children and encouraging them and exhorting them in that light.
That's right. And you know, going back to a point you made in the introduction, you know, every parent is free to do what they believe is right for their children, and nobody should tell them otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And even the things that I'm saying here are just recommendations to take to prayer.
Right.
But having said that, I would not recommend having this sort of I'm not going to let my child have this until, say, they graduate from high school, because by then it's too late and you're not forming them in anything.
Mm.
That brings you back to that gatekeeper relationship that either doesn't let them have it or lets them have it all without any kind of supervision or guidance.
Right. Well, Greg, thank you so much for making the time to speak with us.
always a pleasure. And if folks would like more support and figure that out, go to CatholicHOM.com and download the app. Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you, Greg. 877-573-7825. Let's hear from you and how you regulate social media.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. It's Studio Spotlight Tuesday. We are bringing it back in this new year. 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. And the question we're asking is, children and smartphone use, social media use, how are you as a family navigating that? Now, we want to hear from you because, number one, the wisdom that you have experienced will be helpful to the rest of our listeners, but also it helps us shape the conversation better, especially based on what our friend Dr. Greg Popchak just shared. So 877-573-7825. Kids and social media, how are you regulating smartphone use and social media use at home? And should they be monitored? We take your calls. 877-573-7825. I want to go back to reiterate some of Greg's counsel earlier, because it's crucial that we do understand at the end of the day, the jurisprudence for the right formation of our children falls to the shoulders of parents, that God has ordained for parents to be the primary formators of children, not just in natural biological realities, but also in moral and spiritual realities. So a few things that we can talk about is, well, think about the kind of phones, whether or not the child should have a phone, what kind of phone, do they need a phone, and what kind of access, when they are allowed to use it, how we as parents are going to shepherd and steward that well as we model discipleship and train them into it. And all of these are genuinely legitimate questions. Every parent is not only allowed to, but encouraged to ask these things, because the answers are going to vary from child to child. What we do need to put out, as Dr. Greg Popchak shared earlier, and as he and his bride will share, while children don't need a smartphone simply because everyone else their age has one, you are the parent. You get to decide, and you get to discern what's best for them and their needs. And you also get to discern how you're going to shepherd them well in the utilization of their phones and smartphones. Because if they are granted smartphones, then inevitably the conversation of social media comes up. Smartphones lend themselves to the facilitation of social media apps. And so that becomes part of that conversation as well. 877 573 7375. We're taking your calls. How are you and your family navigating social media questions and smartphone questions with your children? 877-573-7825. The other thing I want to bring up is, and this is not just in conversations with the Pop Checks, but also with Dr. Ray Guarendi in the past, that because we are their parents, we have the right and therefore the obligation to be engaged in how they utilize social media. One analogy that Greg brought up that I think really puts things into perspective is, if my child brings a person into my house, I as a parent now have the right to find out about this person. And to, if an issue has been brought into my house by this person, I have the right to find out about that issue and to help my child navigate that well. So look at their social media. What apps do they use? What apps do they want to use? Why do they want to use those apps? Now, as Greg mentioned earlier, we don't have to be afraid of social media, but we can exercise proper caution. In my years of teaching high school and doing youth ministry, I can honestly, sincerely say that I find very little to no benefit in TikTok. Now, some might say I betray my age in saying this, but and that might well be the case. The issue I have with TikTok more than any other social media platform is that it doesn't facilitate a capacity for long-term, long-form thought. It is very rapid fire, and it trains the brain of the user to be very quickly stimulated and therefore very quickly bored. I saw this in the students I was teaching in the high school, and I even saw great benefit in those who got rid of TikTok from their phones and how it helped, they, by their own testimony, how it helped them be able to focus on reading texts better, reading books better. Now, you can take this as anecdotal. I don't pretend to be an expert on this matter. I will say, however, that every social media platform has different ways in which it engages the individual. And so we want to hear from you and how you are navigating your child's social media use. 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. And if you have counsel you want to offer me, my oldest child is 3, so far from social media use. I shudder to think what social media is going to look like when Benedict is old enough to use social media, but I'd still love to hear from you. 877-573-7825. Now, going back to Greg's analogy here, talk with our children about social media. Talk with them about some of the things that do show up on social media, and establish rules, establish guidelines that help our children navigate them well, and create this environment where we can shepherd them in the use of this media. And like Greg mentioned, one way to do this is to allow a lot of times for social media use with the parents around, and so that questions can be asked, and to explain those rules well. Create avenues where children can use this media and to talk about why the rules that we have exist. Why do we think it's necessary for our children to have those rules? Stepping into this world of social media use is in some ways unprecedented, and maybe that's something that I ought to put out there. For many of us who are parents, we didn't grow up at a young age with social media access. And so for all of us, we're navigating this for the first time. So acknowledging that we're going to make mistakes, we're going to mess up, that we're not perfect, no rule is foolproof. And therefore, it goes back to the parental prudence of discerning the maturity, the needs of each child as they come. That's going to be so crucial. The continued development of a discipleship relationship with our child. I cannot begin to stress this. Our children are going to work with our rules, but factually, children are creative. And sometimes, and this is coming from experience of teaching high school, I don't have teenagers. Sometimes they're going to try to skirt the rules. Sometimes they're going to work around the rules. And sometimes we're going to catch them in doing so. And often, as is the case with all smart platforms, we also have to get ready for the fact that our children are going to accidentally access some things that they should not. And it's going to affect the kind of conversations we ought to have with them. And while we can pray that that won't happen, given the sheer proliferation and plethora of inappropriate resources, and I'm trying to find the gentlest way to say this, on smart platforms, on search engines, and even on social media. We need to prayerfully guide our children to having conversations that help them navigate this world well. Because it might happen at some point. In fact, it's very likely, actually, statistically likely, that it will happen at some point. It's not the end of the world. Prudence, virtue can be built. Children can grow in that. And having a kind of trusting relationship of their parents will go a long way in facilitating that. Again, 877-573-7825. We're going to Lori, listening in Missouri on Covenant Network. Lori,
Hi there, Dr. Peters.
Hello, Lori.
Dr.
It's great to speak with you.
I just wanted to share my experience. I have four children, and they're all adults now. The youngest one is in her first year at college, and actually Benedictine Catholic College outside of Kansas City. Mm. Yay! But the first three, I had three under age three, so they were all together. And when those three were in high school, number four, I was pregnant with number four, and I raised her virtually by myself. So there was a gap of 15 years. Mm-hmm. So technology changed between the first three and number four.
Yep.
Number two and three were in high school when texting started, when dumb phones were texting, and that became an issue. And they grew up and became adults. So number four, who's 19...
Lori, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to pause you there because the music just hit. When we come back from the break, we really want to hear your story. 877-573-7825. Call now and share how you and your family are navigating social media and smartphone use with your children. 877-573-7825. We will listen to Lori on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise is more popular than ever. Every year, couples testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. The 2026 cruise is already three-quarters full, so if you want to join, now is the time. Special guests include musicians Andrea Bocelli, Matt Maher, Sarah Kroger, and John Ignatie, as well as hosts from Ave Maria Radio. Fun, romance, devotion. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Travel tab to find out more.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry providing families nationwide with a better solution centered around whole health, spirit, mind, and body. Our members share their medical burdens within a faith-filled community. At CMF Curo, our members have access to a spiritual director, concierge services, and other health and spiritual resources. Find out if CMF Curo is a better solution for your family. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law. Unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu. This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
He is honored by the church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Believers who respond to God's Word and become members of Christ's body are intimately united to Him, the Catholic Catechism tells us. In that body, those who believe are united with Christ through the sacraments in a very real and hidden way. The body's unity does not do away with the diversity of its members who engage in a diversity of functions. The unity of the mystical body triumphs over all human divisions. As St. Paul says, there are no Jews, no Greeks, no slave, no free man. All are one in the body of Christ. Christ is the head of the body of the church, the principle of creation and redemption. We are united with Christ in his Passover. All his members must strive to resemble him until Christ is formed in them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Italy aficionado Teresa Tomio's newest book is coming soon to the Ave Maria online store. In Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Teresa Tomio provides how best to navigate the most popular sites, best routes, and how to best soak in all the beauty Italy has to offer. She also shares the most inspiring journeys to make your Italy excursion utterly unforgettable. Shrines and Wonders from Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomio, will be found soon at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We're taking your calls, 877-573-7825. We want to hear from you how you and your family are navigating social media and smartphone use with your children. 877-573-7825. We are going to Lori in Missouri, Covenant Network, listening on Covenant Network. Lori, sorry you got cut off earlier. So, yes, please share with us. So, you had a disparity in how technology was for your older children than your youngest.
Yes, three olders, and now the youngest is 19. So, I had to be proactive because technology was a whole new thing with this youngest one. And it was really on my shoulders because I single parented her. So here's some tips that worked for me. One was I would upgrade my smartphone, mm-hmm. I would give it to her to use on Wi-Fi, but it had to be charged in my room at night. So she was like lower elementary, and she didn't have, there was screen time on and screen time off. She couldn't just sit around on the screens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember she was saying in elementary school, why do I have to charge it in your room? I said, because in no time you're going to be a teenager and a friend is going to text you at midnight and I don't want them waking you up. Of course, this made no sense to her. But I'm like, this is good habit. It's a good habit that we're forming here.
Mm-hmm.
And in no time she was a teenager and I would move the phone to her room in the morning so it could be her alarm clock, and I'd see who had been texting her late at night. I'm like, leave my daughter alone late at night.
Mm-hmm.
So turned out that it was really good to charge the technology in my room overnight. Another thing I did was she liked to game, and I had three rules. No blood and guts. No cuss words, and if someone dies, they have to vanish immediately or snap back together. You know, again, it was no gore. Three rules. I wrote them on a piece of paper, and I put them above where her computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I could always see the screen easily. I could walk up to the screen and see it. I think that's that's important as well for parents. But when it came to social media, she didn't get a smartphone until she was in ninth grade. On her 14th birthday, I went to get her a phone. Actually, I wanted it to be a dumb phone, but the cheapest phone I could find was a smartphone at $25 a month, so she ended up with a smartphone. But I waited until she was 14. Through high school, she could read comments, but not have a social media account and be on social media.
Mm-hmm.
She could read comments on YouTube and whatnot because she would like to watch videos, and she could read the comments but not participate in the conversation.
Right, right.
And she was okay with that. And last thing is, when she was late junior year or 11th grade, end of 11th grade or 12th grade, she was doing art, and she asked if she could have an Instagram account to post her art there. She wanted to participate in contests and whatnot, and I said that was okay. So basically, like Dr. Popchek recommended, I wanted to not say no, not say, you know, all yes or all no, but form her in being responsible with a phone.
Right.
With screens.
I'm really glad that you shared all of this, because even as you're talking, I'm realizing that there are other nuances to this topic that we don't immediately think about, even the blood and gore situation when it comes to video games. But thank you so much, Lori, for sharing all of this. And I have no doubt it was very beneficial for our listeners. So that was Lori from Missouri listening on Covenant Network. And we're going to go to Sarah in Michigan in a little bit. But I do want to comment very briefly. One thing that we could learn from the conversation with Lori is that she discerned the needs of her daughter based on her daughter's development and her own knowledge of her discernment of her daughter's maturity and capacity and needs as they arose. And that's an exercise in good parenting. So again, we want to hear from you and how you've been navigating this. 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. We're going to Sarah, listening in Michigan on Ave Maria Radio. Sarah, great to hear from you.
Hi, Dr. Peters.
Hello.
I just figured I would share a little bit of our experiences with our two sons. They're 19 and 17 now, but we waited as long as we felt that we kind of could. They had some sporting events and different things where some of the teams had some, it was almost like the coaches had expectations that the kids would have the ability to call parents and things like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, around 14, we actually went to the level of writing up a contract that they had to sign. So it was really clear that this was important, and that we felt, you know, this is a life impacting device. Mm-hmm. And there are potential good things that can come from it, a lot of potential bad things. You have to manage technology so it doesn't manage you. And you know, it was very clear what the expectations were and what the consequences were if there were problems. You know, they got one device kind of thing, and if it needed to be taken, it would absolutely be taken. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege, not an expectation, and those types of things.
Right.
And I think similar to the previous caller, we never allowed devices, even from a very young age, to be in the bedroom, mm-hmm. ever. So they were always in like a living room or a kitchen or something, to where it was very easy to see what kids were doing, and then no issues with charging them in their rooms and stuff like that. So and even as they got older, there was just never that, they never had the expectation that they could have it in their room and be up at 2 a.m. like,
right.
You know, like you hear about sometimes.
And so this had to do with the kind of phone that you got them, right? Did you get them a smartphone and allow social media usage from a young age?
No, good question. We did not allow all apps right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And some of them, you know, came like at a measured pace and with levels of different observation. Now, like my oldest, the apps would get deleted Sunday night. So let's say his Instagram account or whatever, and then he could download it again at, let's say, you know, Sunday at noon or something, and he could use it for, like, let's say, an hour or something, to where he could catch up on some feeds, post a little bit, and then he's done again for the week.
Mm.
And so that was kind of a measured way of starting off with some things. And interestingly, they both don't really use much for social media. You know, now, I mean, they're just 17 and 19 now, but that's how we went about it.
Well, I'm really grateful you shared that, because that's a pretty wise method of controlled exposure, and it trained them to develop the prudence. Thank you very much for your call, Sarah.
Yep, you're welcome.
That was Sarah from Michigan listening on Ave Maria Radio. And again, what this demonstrates is parental prudence is so necessary in helping our children navigate this well. Now, some of us might have a more hands-off approach in allowing our children to make certain decisions for themselves. And we want to hear from all of you what has worked, what hasn't, in terms of not only smartphone usage or dumb phone usage, as they're calling the converse of it, but and also social media usage and how you've inducted your children into using them. What has worked for your family? What have you seen bear fruit? And what are some of the effects that you've seen as a result in terms of how they conduct themselves now? 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. Call now and we'll hear from you on the other side of the break. 877-573-7825. How are you helping your children navigate smartphone and social media usage? Stay tuned. I'm Ox Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Everything we say in the Mass is directly from Scripture. The opening prayers, the closing words from the deacon. Everything except the homily, which is an actual reflection or supposed to be on the readings of the day. Everything is directly from Scripture. So when people say, well, I never heard the Bible at Mass, and that's why I left the Catholic Church, that's simply factually wrong. They either have not been to a Mass or are not willing to admit just how scripturally sound the Mass is. So I think it's very important to study Scripture. So important, and especially as it relates to the celebration of the Eucharist, right? Which is a coming together of a celebration of Thanksgiving. That's what the word means. And there's all kinds of great things you can learn about our relationship with the Lord in the Eucharist and in the Mass by studying Scripture.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Too often we parents get so caught up in the day-to-day grind of family life, appointments, chores, emails, and so on, that we don't spend enough time on our most important job, spiritually parenting our kids. What is spiritual parenting? It's nothing more than capturing our kids' hearts and then doing what we can to bring their hearts to God. The liturgy of domestic church life provides the rituals and routines we need to be good spiritual parents. Prioritizing family time, being extravagant in our affection and affirmation, serving one another generously and cheerfully, and practicing gentle discipleship discipline. Ultimately, spiritual parenting is about helping our kids recognize their inherent worth so that they, in turn, can love God and others wholeheartedly. To find out more about spiritual parenting, check out our books, Parenting Your Kids with Grace and Parenting Your Teens and Tweens with Grace, or visit CatholicHOM.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We're taking your calls on how you are helping your young children navigate the world of smartphones and social media. And frankly, I've learned quite a bit from the two calls that we've received, so I'd greatly love to hear from you. 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. How are you helping your children navigate the world of smartphones and social media as you induct them into using them? 877-573-7825. The last caller, Sarah, introduced a concept that I think is crucial, which is the understanding of the concept of contracts and entering into a contract. During the break, I was mulling over this concept, and I do a lot by way of covenant theology, which is a vowed exchange of lives. In the scriptures, we talk about how bride and bridegroom become one, and they vow each other's lives to each other, and God ratifies the covenant. But we enter into contracts all the time, even verbal contracts. You do this with your children all the time. You ask your child to do XYZ, and you agree to do XYZ. Now, the reason why I found that to be such a brilliant concept to talk about right now is one of the things I realized in teaching high school is that young people are growing up without a sense of the value of their word. That your word is your bond, and that a big part of honor and integrity is the concept that what you have said you will do, you are required to do, and you will be gauged as a person of integrity based on how well you keep your word. There was a time in history where keeping your word, signing your name to something, held tremendous special significance, and in a lot of ways it still does. We can't take that for granted. We used to, as a society, pride ourselves in being of virtue, natural virtue, and we called that a person of good character. Personal integrity meant keeping your word as bond. And so in navigating the world of smartphones and social media, a big part of this is what kind of person am I raising my child to be, and asking our children, what kind of person am I becoming? And so that concept of signing a contract was actually pretty intriguing for me, and it's something I'd like to explore further in future episodes. Again, 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. How are you helping your children navigate the world of smartphones and social media? We're going to Olivia, listening in Virginia on Sirius XM. Olivia, I was told you have a question.
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. I listened to the two previous callers, and they're absolutely spot on. Those are great rules, and we had all of them too. We actually started with a non-smartphone the first year or two of high school, and then we ended up giving a regular smartphone when they were 16, and the young one's 15. But the problem that we have is the high school that they are attending requires them to have their cell phone with them at all times, mm-hmm. and requires them to have their computer with them at all times. In the school, and so if we can't really enforce our rules, if the consequence is that they get their phone taken away, we can't do that because the school requires them to have their phone.
Right.
We're trying to advocate, but the school could care less. What are some other things that we could do? Because we can't really take away their phone, and also they have to have their phone when they're doing their homework all the time, and their computers. They have to be hooked into everything. So I'll just take my call off the line.
Before you go, Olivia, I just want to clarify so that I understand. What is the school utilizing the phone for? I understand that they're required to be connected, but to what? What is the school communicating to the students via the phone?
Yes. The first thing is the Snapchats and the group projects that they do.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
You have to do the group projects. The kids are doing them sometimes at 10, 11 at night. Like, my child would get her portion of the project done at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but she has to wait for her project cohort to, you know, finally gets to work at 10 o'clock at night. So they're on their phone at 10 o'clock at night trying to do these projects together because you can't, they don't really support a lot of individual work in the high schools. It's all group.
Right.
And so that's one thing. And then the second thing is for science, for labs, they're supposed to be taking pictures of things, taking videos of things. For English presentations, they want almost everything online. They want you to do, you know, online presentations, stop mode. I don't know the names of all these things, but they have to use software that's on their phone and on their computer constantly for all these projects. And it's, in my view, it's out of hand. I homeschooled for many, many years,
right.
And they were able to learn a lot more homeschooling than they've ever learned in their 4 years of high school. And we didn't, we were not very internet-based, but, you know, that I can't really argue with the way society is going with that right now, but
right.
That's where we are.
Olivia, thank you so much for sharing this. I'm going to offer my own experience in having taught in different high schools. I did teach at a high school where laptops were the expected modus through which all teachers communicated with their students and the school communicated with the students. In fact, it was an expectation that students would purchase a particular kind of laptop. I don't want to into the weeds of the model and whatnot. But it wasn't the expectation that cell phones and smartphones would be constantly connected for the sake of this. Although I will say that school populace, I would be hard-pressed to find a single student that didn't have a smartphone. So I guess it was to be expected in that local area's culture. I do want to say this. I have noticed, and I'm reading more and more reports, of high schools moving down the trend of de-smartifying, and I just coined that term. I understand I just coined that term. What I mean by that is making sure that academic engagement isn't contingent upon laptops or especially upon smartphones. In fact, I've read of schools, especially Catholic schools, that are going down the path, classical schools also, that are going down the path of becoming a no cell phone campus. And so this surprises me, but on the one hand, but also on the other hand, it really doesn't. We have created a culture. I had a guest on some time ago on Ave Maria in the afternoon. We've created a culture where we have allowed ourselves a kind of slavish dependence upon, in this case, smartphones and smart devices for the sake of even the most mundane, transient operations for, in this case, academics, but also in life. As parents, in one of the schools that I used to teach at, by the way, the number is 877-573-7825. We still welcome your calls. I'd love to hear from you. 877-573-7825. How are you helping your children navigate social media and smartphones? As parents, as I've been mentioning, and this, the reason I mention this is because it's a biblical concept and the church has always been at the forefront of this. Parents have the final say and the right of jurisprudence for the moral, ethical, natural, and supernatural upbringing of their children. And if that is the case, and if you as a parent determine that this is not what you believe is best for your child in terms of continued access through the day, unfettered access, then the parent has the right, the moral right, to be able to say, well, no, this is not what I believe is best for my child. And sometimes that might involve having clear conversations with administration, and sometimes that might mean taking a stand, and I understand that's difficult. But I share this because I personally know of a case where I know the couple, I know the parents, who took the stand for the sake of their child, and they didn't want their child's academics to be influenced by smart objects for a variety of reasons that we won't go into. And so what they did was they communicated with me that these are our expectations. And of course, I not only respected them, I respected the fact that they are doing this for the sake of raising their child, discerning their child's needs and doing that well. And so we worked around it because that is the role of the teacher. The teacher and the school has to understand that they are there at the service of the formation of children on behalf of the parents, but not in replacement of the parents. And that's why it's so crucial for parents to not only be involved in the academic formation of children, but also to have at the forefront of their mind that academia, the work of academic striving, must have as its end the virtuous formation of the soul of the child. And so going back to this last caller, the question here really has to do with, do the parents believe that this is what's best for their child's formation? And if they don't believe so, well, no, then they have the right to say, I don't want to do this, and my child will require particular accommodations in these on these fronts. And sometimes that might even look like choosing alternative academic institutions. And I know that is a tremendously difficult decision to make, given whatever options you might have available. I do want to say, here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the schools that I am closest to right now, approximate in terms of geography, they've gone down the path of making sure that there's no dependence on social media and on smartphones. And if there is utilization of social media and smartphones, it is tangential to and not crucial to the high school life and the academic life of the child. So all of this is to say this, as Dr. Greg Popchak said earlier, and I want to reiterate, these are tools. Tools by themselves are not the enemy. And parents, you and I stand at the forefront of discernment for the sake of what is best morally, naturally, and supernaturally, and therefore in the formation of virtue and holiness for all of our children. And there's a moral accountability at play here. And as we induct them into a life of expansive moral growth, as we keep opening the doorway for them to experience these things, and as we shepherd them well, ultimately our discernment as parents is what's most crucial. The school, the state, teachers can't take that away. And if parents have at the forefront of their mind the eternal salvation of their children, then that is the highest good we can will our children. So I want to thank all of you who called in. I want to thank all of you who contributed your ideas, your suggestions, and what has worked for you. And as all good parents striving to help our children navigate the world of smartphones and social media, let's keep praying and supporting each other. Let's keep reading and trusting in God's gift of discernment. Thank you for joining us on Ave Maria in the afternoon. Until tomorrow, I'm Mark Speecher.